Hey, Donna Price here with Visionary Women Printers Radio. And we are kicking off our fourth season with the podcast and have been on hiatus for a while. So I'm thrilled to be back with Visionary Women Printers, envision with purpose, lead with compassion, strategize to have an impact, take consistent action to make it happen, take on challenges and learn from them, and celebrate successes. This is our fourth season, and I am honored to have Amanda Blackwood with Growth from Darkness as the first guest. Amanda Blackwood is an incredible person. She is an accomplished artist and author of many books that I have notes in the show notes for you to access her books, and we're going to talk about some during the interview. She's a public speaker, a podcast host herself, a trauma recovery mentor, and a survivor of human trafficking. A portion of every book sale goes to help fight human trafficking. Amanda lives in Denver, Colorado, with her rescue cats, her supportive husband, who keep her sane. So I want to acknowledge that the topic today, human trafficking, Amanda's going to share her story. And it is hard to listen to. I hope that as you listen, you learn from her experience, but also her resilience, her courage and her determination to survive. Hopefully, the interview I've done justice to. Definitely a challenging topic to talk about. And I'm just so honored that she decided to come and share her story here and be part of Visionary Women Printers. In the show notes, you'll see links to her website. She has some incredible resources there for survivors of trauma. And we talk in the show about that there's many different types of trauma. So I encourage you to visit her website. She also has an incredible podcast that gives additional information and resources. So definitely check that all of that out. Go into the show knowing that this is a hard topic, and part of it is hard to hear, hard to listen to, and just so much respect for Amanda with her continued courage to speak out and continue sharing her story. We talk a lot about her book, Custom Justice, which is autobiographical and available on her website as well, and where she shares more about her story in the book. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being a listener of Visionary Women Printers Radio. And I look forward to sharing this episode with you. Amanda, welcome to Visionary Women Printers Radio. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Thank you, Donna. I'm excited to be here.
You have such an interesting story that I'm excited to share with our listeners, but I wanted to also say that your story gets us to how your business started. And we always start with what your vision is for your business and making a difference in the world. And you're making a huge difference. So I'm going to start there and then we're going to go back. Okay.
Okay. So basically what I'm focusing on these days is something I call growth from darkness. Because no matter what your past has said about you, you can still find growth from your own darkness. Trauma lives in our bodies. It becomes a part of our bones and a part of our being. It rewires the way we think and the way we live our lives. And a lot of people get stuck in the trauma reactions or the stages of trauma. And my purpose now is to try and help pull people out of that and to show them by example through my podcast or by my writings that there is a life beyond this trauma and they can be fully productive. They can have these winning, beautiful relationships in their lives. It is absolutely possible, but they need to understand the trauma before they begin that.
Awesome. That's incredible. So let's go back and bring people like to how you got to your vision and start with where you grew up and what family life was like.
I grew up all over the place. My father was in the military. I was actually born in Germany. I've moved 43 times in my life, and I am right now 43 years old. So do the math. It's pretty staggering.
It's a lot of times.
Yeah. I was manipulated and abused as a child. So physically abused by my father, mentally and emotionally abused by my mother, and sexually abused by my brother starting when I was 4. Oh my God. With all of this going on, my home life when I was really young was really tumultuous. I often tell people that, you know, I faced molestation when I was 4, again at 12, again at 13, again at 15, raped at 17, and then life got serious. So, at 18 years old, I was trafficked.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so tell us a little bit more about that so that we can then talk about how you overcame the trauma, because that's like incredible. The incredible part of the story.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot. And I hope you put a disclaimer on this one. This might be kind of difficult for some people to listen to. So I was trafficked the first time when I was 18 by a man that I was dating who was more than twice my age at the time. When I got away from him, I found myself in another abusive relationship, which is common for people who grow up in abusive households.
Yes. You know,
as a kid, you learn that the people who love you and the people who you trust also on the same hand hurt you. And if somebody doesn't hurt you, if they're not controlling you, if they're not jealous, if they're not violent toward you in some way, they don't love you and they're not paying any attention to you and you're just a waste of time for them. So you gravitate away from those healthy relationships and more toward the unhealthy relationships. And I did this for a long time. And I bounced from one place to another. I was trafficked the second time in another state in a completely unrelated incident by completely unrelated people when I was 19. It was only a year later. So I had this track record going, and I started to recognize that there were these cycles happening in my life and I needed to get away from this. And I wasn't sure where to start. I thought what that meant for me was a new city, another town, a new place, new faces. So by the age of 21, I was divorced. And at 22, I was moving out to Los Angeles from a very small town in Arkansas and gave myself the culture shock of my life.
Yeah, Arkansas and LA are kind of different.
Considerably. The town I lived in Arkansas had a population of 163 people. When I left the town, they painted over the 3 and put a 2. It was a very small town. So going from that to Los Angeles, I barely had a driver's license. I had a lot of trauma already built up in my body. And here I was moving to LA to yet again be with another guy who turned out to be abusive and manipulative and narcissistic and lots of key things that I should have been on the lookout for at that point. But I hadn't taught myself yet what red flags to watch out for.
Yeah.
I got out there and I left him and I floated around and moved all over this area for 14 years. And during that time, I got into a couple of other relationships. And one of them was a long distance relationship with a police officer. And I started to see this guy as, you know, he is safe. For one thing, he is in Scotland. So he is 1,000 miles away from me, thousand miles away from me. The chances of him being able to reach through this computer screen and injure me the way that I have previously been injured are slim to none. He's right. Also a police officer, so he's the kind of person that's out there to protect people like me. I saw this relationship as, this is my shot at happiness. So after 7 years of us knowing each other online, he came to visit me, and I went to go and visit him, and I absolutely loved Scotland. Scotland, and I loved his family, and I loved his daughter, and I loved him, or the him that he showed me.
Yeah.
So he asked me to get a fiance visa, and I left my career and my car and my home. I sold what I could and flew to Scotland on a fiance visa to marry this man. And in less than a week, he had all of my documentation and money, and he was trafficking me out of his home.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I almost did not come back from this. I was stuck in Scotland being trafficked for the next 152 days. This was 2011. I was 31 years old. Most people think that trafficking only happens to kids. Children, people under the age of 18, make up 25% of the trafficked population in the world.
So define trafficking for people. I know that's hard. A hard yes. answer probably, but let's define it so that people are clear what you mean.
I actually cover this when I'm speaking on stages and stuff. Okay. I've gotten pretty good at it. There's a couple of different definitions. The most popular and the most accepted one is the Department of Homeland Defense. They define trafficking as the use of force, fraud, or coercion to obtain labor or sex acts from another person.
Okay.
That sounds kind of cut and dry. Google has something in there about the transportation of a person. But when you break down the very definition of what trafficking means, that is, especially in when you're talking about like drug trafficking and stuff, you're not talking about transportation of this drug from one city to another or across international lines. You're talking about selling it from one person to another, right?
Yep.
So the same thing applies with human trafficking. When we're talking about transporting people across international borders or across state borders, that's not human trafficking. That's human smuggling. And there's a huge confusion between the two, especially yeah. of the last 5-10 years or so.
Okay.
That needs to be made very clear. When I went to Scotland, I did go on my own reconnaissance, but it was fraud that got me there.
Right.
Yeah. He coerced me, and then he used fraud against me, and then he used force to get me to perform. Okay. So it was definitely the Department of Homeland Security's definition.
Right. So let's talk about how you got out of that after 152 days, I think you said.
152 days. So I tried to get out several times. I went over there in January 2011, and by February, I had already conned my way into having back my debit card and my passport just for overnight use. And I used what money I had left for an emergency flight home. I couldn't afford the one for the very next day. I didn't have that much money. So I had to wait, I think it was 5 days for a flight. But I had it all in my head. I knew exactly where to go. I knew exactly what to do. And because of the abuse that was occurring, I ended up with a kidney infection so severe that I ended up in the hospital. Oh, and I didn't make the flight. It was mm-hmm. a non-refundable flight. So I lost the money and I lost my one way out. At one point, I tried to commit suicide. This is very common. Less than 2% of all victims of trafficking actually survive. The fact that I'm still here is a miracle.
Definitely.
When I tried to commit suicide, what stopped me was the eyes of a child on the train platform. I looked at this kid and I saw the innocence that I myself lost at such a young age. And I knew that I could not do that to another human. I couldn't do that to a child. So rather than committing suicide by train, I turned around and I went back to my prison. And I've always had this deep belief of God in my heart. And I remember that day walking back to what was my prison and telling God, okay, you kept me alive now. I know there's got to be a reason. You're not going to let me die here. You are not going to let this be the last bit of my existence, is this pain that I'm feeling. Yeah. I know there's something more. And I fought hard. And I thought and thought and thought, and I knew that there was no way that I was going to use physical force to be able to get out of this situation. What I needed to do was use what was being used against me, and that was the manipulation tactics. This man was very smart. He'd been a police officer for a great many years. He could usually see right through somebody's lies.
Okay.
And I reminded him that we weren't married, and that if I overstayed my visa, that was only good for 6 months, and we weren't married by the end of that visa, that if they found out, I could be deported from the UK. And according to UK laws, I would never be allowed back into the country, and that'd be just terrible. And if they found out, that he could lose his job as a police officer, and we certainly wouldn't want that. And I turned his manipulation around on him. And at the end of that conversation that night, he had his laptop computer out and was buying me a round trip flight for me to return in time for my birthday that year.
All right. On another visa.
Yep.
Okay.
And I got on that flight to leave. And I remember when I first got to Scotland, I was a nervous flyer. I was a white knuckle person, you know,
yeah.
Absolutely terrified, hated the thought of long flights, hated turbulence. I was convinced that every bump was going to kill me. And I remember as I was getting on that plane that day, all of that fear was completely gone, because what scared me more was staying back there where he was.
Definitely.
This was my ticket to freedom. 2 years later, I became a flight attendant.
Best flight.
It was the best flight to date. Yeah. Yeah. And 2 years later, I became a flight attendant.
All right.
So I thought I had left all of this behind, right? This is June of 2011. I'm starting to regain some sense of myself. I'm starting to regain my life. And then the attacks started. It wasn't bad enough what he'd already done to me. He started sharing photos and videos of me being trafficked. And he was sharing these with people that I was working for, people that I was working with. He was ending long-term friendships and relationships where I had known these people for decades, because these people now saw me differently, and they saw me as something that I wasn't. I couldn't reconcile that in my brain, that they couldn't understand that this was abuse.
Yeah.
I didn't even have a word for it yet. I didn't know that what I had experienced was called human trafficking.
Right.
I went to a conference in 2018 on human trafficking, and I sat in the front row because I was all geared up and ready to help save the kids from the windowless vans and the creeps out in the streets. And what I learned there changed my world forever. More than 80% of all people who are trafficked by people they know and trust and love, usually parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, their own boyfriends and girlfriends. And that's when it started to click in my brain. I wasn't quite ready to accept it yet. And yet when I stood up to ask my question to the panel of speakers and ask them, how long does it take for somebody to have survived something like this, to have a normal life? What came out instead was, I'm a survivor. And it was the first time I had ever said the words in my life. It scared the daylights out of me, but I finally got the question out. And the answer was that it's different for everybody. And that also started wheels turning. And that kind of set me on the trajectory that I'm on now. The very following year, the same man put up those photos and videos all over the place on different pornography websites. And I started to understand the correlation between human trafficking and pornography, and that a lot of the pornography that's out there is made with victims of human trafficking. And I was appalled. I reached out to an organization that gets legal help for survivors of human trafficking.
Good.
And this law firm in New York City started immediately attacking these pornography websites and demanding that they remove all of this material over and over and over and over. These guys were doing this, and they were just going after it hard every single time something would pop up. But yet every time it was taken down, it would be put up again. And finally, I decided, if people are going to know this about me, they need to know where it's coming from. They need to know the truth. So in December of 2020, I finally wrote my full autobiography as a survivor of human trafficking and childhood assault and trauma. going through and writing that book was probably one of the most cathartic things I've ever done in my life. I started to notice the trends and the links between this thing over here and that thing over there, and that there was this invisible thread stretched between them, and they were absolutely attached to one another. One couldn't have existed without the other existing first.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned so much about it that I became a subject matter expert and a public speaker on my experiences. And now I'm a trauma recovery mentor, helping people to move beyond their own past and to unlock their potential for their future.
That's incredible and so important, because there are so many people that need what you have to offer.
I needed it. Yeah. And I think that's why I started to do it, is because I knew that there was this huge lack of these resources for people with limited income. And the people with limited incomes are the people who experience so much trauma and believe wholeheartedly that they're going to be stuck there for the rest of their lives, because they can't afford counseling and rehab services and these different forms of assistance that are available to people that have the income and the means. But when you've been abused like this your whole life, you don't have education to back you up. You know, you don't have these unlimited funds to be able to just throw them at life coaches and counselors and therapists and specialists.
Right.
We have to learn how to take control of our own trauma reactions.
So it sounds like for you, you started, like, going to that conference was life-changing. And so that was like a first step in identifying yourself as a survivor. And I would think in that recovery journey. And then writing the book sounds like it was healing to a certain extent itself, just in identifying and writing the book. So what other things have you done to move yourself, like, past trauma? Like, what are some of the steps that you've taken to heal?
I was able to find an anti-trafficking organization out here in Colorado. This organization was then able to help me with the counseling and therapy stuff that I personally needed to be able to kind of unlock a last couple of things to get to the process of writing the book. I do mention them in the book. It's a great organization that helps specifically human trafficking survivors. And they just opened up a home for survivors here in Colorado. So they actually have a housing facility for them now. It's amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
They were hugely helpful to me. The therapist was helpful to me. But definitely the biggest thing for me was writing my entire life onto paper. I can't stress that enough. It is so hugely helpful for people to just write it all down, even if they don't plan on ever publishing the book. I knew I wanted to write this someday, but I had no idea how much detail I'd go into.
Yeah.
It helped so much for me to understand me.
Yeah, definitely. I find for myself and with my clients, writing is definitely a tool that, and like you're saying, you don't have to publish anything, but it's a valuable tool for your own personal well-being to write things down and acknowledge pain or acknowledge successes, or, you know, but just to get them down. And I find also sometimes it's a place for, like, helping me remember,
right,
like, what I have accomplished or what I, you know, have succeeded at, because sometimes you can gloss over with the day-to-day that happens in your life.
Right. Absolutely. And it's so easy to do that, where you just slip into this frame of negativity where you just keep telling yourself, and it's a form of imposter syndrome, that not only am I not good enough to write this book, but I'm not good enough to do these other things either, because who am I? I'm just some broken thing. When in reality, what we are is incredible human beings who've overcome a lot. And we need to recognize that because other people are starting to recognize that too. Yeah. And one of the great things that I've recognized in myself in the last couple of years is that when I start feeling like this, I have a little pad of paper on my coffee table and I'll write down, I will focus really hard sometimes and write down just one thing that I am thankful for. And then I will tear that piece of paper off and put it inside a very large flower vase. And on the days where I can't think of anything that I'm grateful for, I dump out the flower vase and I start digging through all that stuff. And I come up with 10 new things that I've never thought of before, just because of that practice of focusing on better things than what it was that I was thinking about.
Oh, that's a great one. I write like gratitude journal, like three things kind of every day, but I love the idea of putting it in a flower vase. And then, you know, because three things in my journal, then you have to like flip back through, like find them or whatever. But right. Having them in the flower vase, my daughter did something like that for me years ago on little sticky notes, and they're all folded and they're in a jar. And when, and I pull them out and, you know, she's like, I love what, you know, something that she likes about me or thank you about me, and kind of a similar idea, and it's inspiring. But I love your idea of doing that. Thank so you. The one book, I think you have more than one book.
I have 12 currently. So, all writing, since 2018.
That's amazing. So the one book is your life story, and the other books, tell us about the other books that you have.
Currently, I'm working on the Growth from Darkness series. This is a 4-book series. The first book just came out last month. It's called The Stages of Trauma. And it's kind of to help guide people through and to understand where they are in the stages of trauma, which start out as denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then acceptance. The second book in the series is going to be going through trauma reactions, what their long-term consequences are, and how we fight back against them. This is mirroring a podcast that I currently have going called Growth from Darkness 2. The third book in the series is about setting up and keeping healthy boundaries. And the fourth book is actually for the outliers of this event that has taken place. It's about supporting the survivors. So if somebody is a trauma survivor and they don't know how to tell a loved one, this is what I need from you, this book is kind of a stepping stone for them to start to understand what it is that has happened to the person that they love and how to support them best. Those should all be out by the end of this year. I also have other books that go into some details of some of the other stuff that I experienced in my abuse and my upbringing that are barely touched on in my autobiography, but it doesn't go into a lot of detail. So those three are The Miller Miles. It's a true story of dishonest revenge. The Shack in the Woods, which is about overcoming a drug addiction when I was 15 years old. My mother put me on these drugs illegally when I was 4. And the third one is Detailed Pieces of a Shattered Dream. It goes into details of, at the time of writing the book, what I thought was my first experience with trafficking. It turned out it was actually my second. I wasn't familiar enough with trafficking at the time to understand that the first experience was more than just abuse.
Okay.
I also have a book of poetry called Twisted Fate. I have a book of all the funny stuff that happened my first year on the job as a flight attendant called 30 Synchronized Woodpeckers, which the title is explained in the first chapter, and it's hilarious. I actually drew all the cartoons and everything inside that book myself, too. I'm very proud of that.
Awesome.
And I finally have my first historical fiction book, came out last year in June. It's called The Road We Left Behind, and it's based on my grandmother's love of her life was not my grandfather. So the family wasn't happy when this book came out. My grandmother, she was a bit of a daredevil, a wing walker, a tightrope, part-time tightrope trapeze artist. She was incredible, but she overcame so much in her own life to be able to have a little piece of happiness with my grandfather. At the very end of her life, there was a letter that came in. And when that letter came in, my mother told me about it. And that one letter is what inspired this entire book. So it really is based on her and inspired by her true story.
Oh, wow. Okay. And what was the name of that book again?
That one is called The Road We Left Behind.
Okay. So
it's got a real life murder mystery in it.
Ooh. Well, that's fun. I write books too, and I have a lot of business books, but then I had fun over the pandemic. I wrote a children's book. So it's fun to like go out of your typical genre and
yes,
do something different. And so that's great.
It's so strange that every book that I've published so far, except for that one, has been nonfiction. Typically, I have always written fiction. I just didn't have the courage or the belief in myself to start trying to publish them.
Yeah.
So I've got this whole long series of historical fiction mystery novels that I've been working on, and I'm looking forward to seeing these start popping up in stores soon too.
Yeah, that's exciting. So can you read a passage from one of your books for our listeners?
Sure. I still have this one handy. So if people want to know a little bit more about what it means to be a survivor, I can do that.
Awesome.
Instead of a blackout drunken stupor, I found myself blocking what I could from my memory because of my inability to fully process it all. I was determined not to feel anything. I couldn't let myself feel it, or else that would mean it had actually happened. And that would mean that I had been turned into a prostitute. The man gave Richard money after Richard had taken my dress off of me. He wanted to see what he was paying for, I guess. Part of me broke inside. With all I had already been through, surely this wasn't worse than all that, was it? "You're okay with this?" Richard asked. I thought he was asking me. He was asking that man. I was no longer a human being. I was a this to him. I was an object. I was owned. I was merchandise. The things that had been happening to me all my life were being used to line someone else's pocket with money. "Yeah," the stranger simply nodded as he turned around to remove his belt. "Couple of basic rules," Richard started to explain. "Nothing without a journey, and you can't leave any marks on her. Otherwise, let's have some fun." A journey? The pilot didn't seem to have any problem understanding what that was, but I certainly did. "A rubber deer, a condom. That's for your protection," he explained to me in the most loving way possible. "And for his," he finished, sliding in an insult there too. For a long time after that, I blocked the encounter from my memory. It was a form of protection because if I forced myself to deal with it, then I'd be forced to admit that I'd gone along with it, even when I didn't want to, because I was scared to say no. I blamed myself. Of course it was my fault. How could it not be? Except what happened to me was not only deplorable and disgusting, but highly illegal, depraved, and worth prison time. It never should have happened. I should never have been put in the position of being forced to comply out of fear. I never should have been put in that situation to begin with. Saying no shouldn't have been a deciding factor at that moment. That moment never should have existed at all. "You'll never have to do it again," Richard told me as we left the hotel that night while I tried to tuck my torn pantyhose in my handbag and failed to do so. "And you can toss those. I can get you new ones. Now we have plenty of money for Las Vegas, too." He snatched them from my hand and tossed them in a lidded trash can not far from where I had vomited in the bushes only a few hours before.
And that's from your autobiography.
Yes. That's from Custom Justice.
Thank you.
And the reason that I named it Custom Justice is important to me. Being able to prosecute a trafficker is very difficult because a lot of times what they use are manipulation tactics, not a gun to your head.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you have a gun to your head, people claim that you have a choice. You could choose to die. But when you are manipulated in such a way with such a great amount of abuse and force, you don't have a choice. And not knowing that you don't have a choice is the same thing as not having a choice. Always.
Mm-hmm.
being able to prosecute within the state of the same person where you live is very difficult. Being able to prosecute across international borders is impossible. I will never have legal justice for what happened to me, but I will have my custom justice by speaking my piece.
Thank you. Thank you for speaking. I think that's so important. Because women or other people hear you and they learn from you, but they also can recognize for themselves what's happening and seek help. And that's important. The other thing I wanted to ask is, in your books, you talk about the growth from darkness, trauma. And when you talk about, when I was listening to your podcast, there's different types of trauma, and it's not necessarily the same type of trauma that you experience, but people have had all sorts of trauma that they need help healing from. And so it sounded to me like your books, your podcasts can be helpful to people from a wide, like, array of different types of trauma, that they don't have, it doesn't have to look just like yours, but it can be, right. Trauma can result, different types of trauma can result in similar reactions in your body, in your health, in your mental health.
Right. And I tell people a lot that trauma is not a destination and it is not a competition. It rewires our brains and changes us into new human beings. We can either learn to work with that and move beyond that, or we can stay in that same wounded place for the rest of our lives. And I know which route I would rather have. And trauma can come in so many different forms, like you just said. It can be human trafficking. It can be being a survivor of domestic violence. It can be surviving a tornado.
Yeah.
This is a traumatic experience, you know, and the word trauma, even to psychologists, is subjective, but not dealing with your trauma can lead to these long-term side effects and illnesses. Back in 2015, a study linked different autoimmune diseases to having experienced trauma. This was the same year that I was diagnosed as having Crohn's disease. I also, after that, was diagnosed in 2019 during the pornography attacks with chronic urticaria, chronic hives. About a year and a half ago, I was finally diagnosed with thyroid disease, which is another autoimmune disease. I've been able to, through my own fighting against trauma reactions and learning about trauma, I've been able to completely defeat the Crohn's disease and the chronic hives. The only thing I have left to battle now is the thyroid disease, but my thyroid at this point is so shot that I can't do it without medical help. So It's important to know when you need to be able to get that medical help too. I'm on thyroid medications and my life is evening out. And I finally have my energy back and I feel fantastic.
Yay.
But it took some time to get there. And
right.
It took help.
Yep. So share, like, how you work with people, because you have the podcast, you have books, but you said you were also a mentor.
Yes. When people reach out to me and what it is that they're finding available to them isn't enough, I will absolutely work one-on-one with somebody through a guided mentorship program where we meet once a week, almost like therapy or counseling, except without me being a therapist and counselor. People don't have to tell me the nitty-gritty of their entire life, because there is a thing called exposure trauma, where somebody is constantly exposing themselves and others to their trauma by constantly talking about the worst parts of it. This can be continually traumatizing for the victim and for the listener. So just talking about what the trauma reactions are, what the current issues are, and what triggers are coming up, I can help people to kind of understand where this is coming from and how to fight back against it, and different techniques like the five senses technique, like the deep breathing technique, different ways of being able to cope with it in that moment so that they can get a better handle on themselves and calm down just enough to be able to start processing where they are.
Awesome. So let's share with people how to find you, your books, your podcast, so that, and I'll include links, of course, in the show notes, but let's let people know.
So I have two different main websites right now. One of them is growthfromdarkness.com, and that is the one that lists the podcast and the Growth from Darkness book series, and my upcoming speaking engagements and the podcasts that go live. Then I have my other website, which is detailedpieces.com. The website is named after my very first book, which was Detailed Pieces of a Shattered Dream. Other than that, I do have the two podcasts, Growth from Darkness and The Survivor by Amanda Blackwood.
Okay.
And on The Survivor by Amanda Blackwood, that's where I interview other trauma survivors who've written about their own recovery as a way of helping others to learn how to cope with what it is that they're going through. And I do interview people who have all kinds of different trauma backgrounds, from a psychology student that was run over by a car and left paralyzed for quite a long time, to yesterday I interviewed a woman who had the unfortunate experience of watching her two young teens battle with drug addiction. Trauma really comes in all shapes and sizes, and there's millions of voices out there crying to be heard, and I just want to give them a way to be able to be heard.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely can look like many different things. And I think so important to not negate that there was trauma. So let's end with a celebration. Like, what are some of the ways that you celebrate wins in your life? Because we've talked about writing and journaling and your vase of gratitude. Any other things that you want to share on celebrating?
When I found out just a few days ago that my podcast is now required listening for a group of law students in the state of Washington, my immediate response was to stand up and dance around in my office here and scream and shout and be very excited. But if you notice this wall behind me, this thing is completely full. This is all a huge collection of 1940s antiques that I wear and use at the 1940s ball every year. Wow. So when I have a really big win, I will find a new 1940s antique somewhere and just grab it for myself. So I've got a couple of old typewriter. I've got ink pens. I've got commercial pencils, hats, handbags, gloves. You can tell I've got an awful lot of wins back here.
Yeah, definitely. I see quite a few hats that look fun too.
Yes, I have hats up in the shelves and all the way on the very top. My husband put these shelves in for me last year because I was running out of room.
They're beautiful. I love it.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast today and sharing your story and your journey with listeners. I think it's so important, and the resources that you have to offer to people are incredible. So I encourage people to listen to your podcast. It's great. I haven't listened to both of them. I've listened to Growth from Darkness and I learned a lot there, and it was valuable to me. So I appreciate that. And I encourage people to listen, reach out if they want to reach out and buy your books. I think you've provided so many incredible things that people can access in different ways. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today to Visionary Womenpreneurs Radio with special guest Amanda Blackwood. Thank you, Amanda, so much for being here, for sharing your story, for your honesty and your willingness to speak out against human trafficking and raise all of our awareness. It is incredible. I encourage you to pick up Amanda's book, of course, and the links are in the show notes. And I encourage you to subscribe to the channel here so that you can get future episodes. Of course, you can pick up our resources at compassroadsconsulting.com/bizologist for the free book, Becoming a Bizologist. And I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Take care, make things happen in your business, continue to impact the world and make it better.